Hello, Cleveland. Welcome to another episode of the Dogland Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Droege. Yes, we are doing back-to-back episodes on back-to-back days. First time we've done this in a while. And as always, I can't do this without my co-host, Jackson McCurry. Jack, how are we doing today?
Doing well, man. Always good talking Browns with you. And we're just inching closer and closer to the start of free agency. As we're recording, the Buffalo Bills are moving players, trying to create cap space. So, it's getting closer and closer to the start of the league year, which means it's about to be a crazy week next week.
Yeah, the new league year, I believe it starts officially a week from today on the 13th.
Yep.
Free agency tamping period starts on Monday, the 11th. So we're about 5 days away from the start of free agency, 7 days away until they're players are officially allowed to sign their deals. We're not sure if we're going to have any, wasn't that DeAndre Jordan with the Mavericks, any sort of like hostage deals or situations? Hopefully we don't end up with it.
I don't think the Browns are going to lock anybody in their house to make them sign with them.
I sure hope not. We got a lot to get into today. Yesterday, we talked about a lot of the offensive free agents. Today, we are going to focus on the defensive side of the ball. But first, Jack, we are going to discuss another article by Mike Florio. We talked about one yesterday. This one is that he has a sense around the NFL that the NFL wants to get to an 18-game schedule. Now, when the NFL went to a 17-game schedule a few seasons ago, this was obviously talked about a lot about going to 18 games, maybe at some point eventually to 20 and eliminating the preseason completely. But there's a sense that, within a few years' time, maybe a little bit longer than that, depending on when the CBA is up for renewal, that the NFL will want to push an 18-game schedule. Me personally, it makes a lot of sense. I really don't think there's much need for preseason. And right now you have a imbalance of home and away games. Right now it alternates every year, 9 home games, 8 away games with the 17-game schedule. It would knock the preseason down to 2 games. And with more teams having these joint practices and training camp with other franchises, I don't really think there's a sense to have these full preseason games as much. So it's just something that makes a lot of sense. I would imagine, within the next 5 years, we'll probably have an 18-game schedule.
Yeah, I mean, you look around sports and, you get more and then you want more. You look at the college football playoff, it's going to a 12-team playoff this year. They're already talking about bumping it up to 14 teams. The NCAA tournament's already got 65 teams or 68 teams. I don't know. They're talking about expanding that. And the NFL, like you said, they expanded to 17 a few years ago. Now they're already talking about expanding it to 18. The NFL loves the dollar signs, and Florio wrote in the article, the NFL has good reasons to increase inventory, another weekend of TV money, more stuff for people to bet on, which obviously leads to more league revenue and reasons why the cap will continue to explode the way it did this year. Andrew Berry hinted at this when we talked about the trade deadline. He said that the one of the weeks to push it back was aimed at accounting for the extra week created by the 17th game, and that a second week was anticipation of further expansion of the regular season to 18 games. That's quoted in the Florio article. I'm with you. I think an 18-game schedule is inevitable, but I do think it'll wait until the CBA expires, which is in 2030. So I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon in the immediate future, but it's something that'll happen, I think, down the road. If they go to 18 games, I'm with you. Slash off another preseason game, but maybe have teams do 2 joint practices instead. I think at some point we would like to see them completely eliminate the preseason, maybe have just 1 game as sort of the dress rehearsal, but the joint practices are good because that gives the teams a sense to see where they rank. The Browns going up against the Eagles the last couple of years, they got a good sense of how we compare to one of the consistently good elite teams of the league. This year they're going up against Minnesota, who obviously is tinkering with some stuff, but I think this is a good sign for the league. Obviously we love football. I don't know how much the players will be liking that. Another regular season game, another week of toll on their bodies and everything, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. But, you know, more football is better, in my opinion. We get plenty of it throughout the year between college, pros, you know, the UFL starting here at the end of March. So that means more football. So more is better in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would, if I'm the players and the NFL wants to go to an 18-game schedule, I'm fighting for a second bye week. I think it makes all the sense in the world to have a second bye week even now. So if I'm the Players Association and the NFL wants to do this, I want a second bye week. And that way it'll push the Super Bowl back a week. It'll be on the weekend of President's Day, and everybody will have off that Monday, and it's kind of a win-win scenario for everybody. And I would also have it be, you know how the Browns had their bye week, what was it, week five this year? I think it was week five or week six. It was early.
It was around that, yeah.
Yeah, is what I'm getting at. You know, I would have like two like bye week windows, you know. So if you're playing 18 games, the first bye week, you know, would be, so the season would be, what, 20 weeks long, right? So the first bye week window should be somewhere in the range of games of week 7 to 11, and the second bye week should be in the range of, say, like 13 to 17. So that way, you know, you could spread them out a little bit more. There'll be plenty of football, you know, on TV still in those weeks. You'll have enough teams playing. It just needs to be spread out properly and not have, you know, these bye weeks starting in week 5 and ending in, you know, week 17 or week 16 or whatever it was. So these teams aren't going so long before they get their bye week, or having it too early, so you're not playing too many games in a row.
Yeah, I love that idea. And especially with the expansion of international games. Like, we're going to Brazil, we already go to London, we're going to Germany. I would imagine there's going to be a Mexico game probably coming back at some point. I know the NFL is probably thinking, how can we attack the Asian market? How can we attack Africa, like other countries? Like, they want to expand this to be a global sport, which it already is, but even further, like, you know, being on a jet for so many hours, like, you don't recover from that right away. So I feel like, especially like the international games being expanded, there needs to be two bye weeks, just because the players need more time to recover, not just taking the toll on the field that they do, but the traveling that they have to do as well.
There's one more rule that I want to institute as well. So if we're going to continue having Thursday night games, you know, there's a lot of, you know, complaints from the players about how quick of a turnaround it is. I would say you can only have a Thursday night game when you're coming off of your bye week. So say you're off for, you know, week 10, and then your bye week, or coming off of that, you play a Thursday night game, and then you have like another 8 days, 9 days before your next one. So kind of like somehow staggering it, so that way you're not playing a game on Sunday and then playing another game on Thursday. The rule would be you would have to play your Thursday night game after your bye week.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good idea as well, because the players don't like the Thursday night games. And like you said, they need more time to recover, especially after quick turnarounds like that. So I feel like have the bye week after the Thursday night game, or leading into the Thursday night game?
Leading into it. So you would be off.
Yeah, that makes the most sense.
The week before, and then, you know, that Thursday night you would play, and then have another like 9 days off before the next game.
Yeah, that makes the most sense, I think, for sure, in terms of the player's health and, you know, being able to recover. And be able to also prepare, because you can't do it like 3 days after like a Sunday night game, or God forbid 2 days after a Monday night game, preparing for a Thursday night game. It It just makes no sense.
Yeah, and we know like Thursday Night Football is not going to go away. There's way too much money in it. Way too much money has been invested in by Amazon. So we're stuck with Thursday night games. It's just a matter of how can we look at the schedule to, you know, maybe make these things a little bit easier on these teams that are playing Thursday Night Football games. And I think that could be one way to do it. So eventually we'll get to the 18 games. Probably eventually we'll get to 20. Maybe there's some other rules that they put into place, but eventually we'll have more regular season football games that matter instead of these glorified scrimmages that really don't.
If they go to 20, they need to expand the rosters because it's just not you're not going to go make it 20 games to the 53-man roster. There needs to be some kind of expansion there if they're going to do something like that.
Yeah, or even have – I mean, you could – expand the rosters or just make it to where, you know, the players designated on your practice squad, you could, you know, have unlimited call ups for those guys or something like that. Just some way to supplement what you already have. Because I don't know if the league will go for like full minimum contracts for those guys, but you know, if you need to bring them up, cause we had the situation with PJ Walker this year where, we were able to elevate him, what, three times before they had to give him a contract. So
same with Joe Flacco.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe they make it to where you can elevate players six times or more and not have to give them a full contract. So that could be an interesting thing that they look at too in terms of like the roster situation when they expand the season eventually. In terms of adding players, we're going to talk about free agency now. And we talked yesterday a lot about the offensive free agents. So now we're going to hop over to the defensive side for a Browns defensive unit that played extremely well all year. Unfortunately, against the Houston Texans in the playoffs, it wasn't great. And, you know, on the road, too, I guess we shouldn't be we wouldn't be remiss if we didn't touch on that they weren't great on the road as well. So this season, they need to get better on the road. And, you know, the free agency is going to be the start of that. And one of the big holes that they have, Jack, is the defensive end position because they haven't re-signed Za'Darius yet. He's definitely going to be testing the waters. You got a big hole on the opposite side of Myles Garrett at the moment. You do have Okoronkwo, who they signed last year, but that's not going to be like an every down pass rusher that they're going to be able to put out there. So they need to add some to this defensive line room. And at edge, you have a handful of guys here that could fit that mold, including bringing back Za'Darius Smith, Danico Autry, Calais Campbell, AJ Epinesa, Marcus Davenport, and Tyquan Lewis. When you look at those guys, Jack, is there anyone that, I guess maybe besides bringing back Za'Darius, is there any one of those guys that really intrigues you as a guy to play opposite of Myles Garrett?
Yeah, I mean, if you bring back Za'Darius, then that makes it easy. Then you got Za'Darius, so that was a nice 1-2 punch that the Browns were able to have and then have the guys behind them. But you look at the rest of the guys that I had mentioned on this list or that you have mentioned on this list, these are more of you're going to plug these guys in and you're going to rotate. Okoronkwo, any of the guys that I mentioned, Autry, Campbell, Epinesa, Davenport, Tyquan Lewis, like these guys would join the mix as a rotation with Okoronkwo, Alex Wright, Isaiah McGuire. I think they all bring good things to the table. Autry and Campbell are a little older. They're both in their mid-30s, so it's hard to ask them to do a lot, but if you're using them in a rotation where they don't have to play as much, I think they can be really effective. Epinesa was a high draft pick a couple years ago. So was Davenport. They haven't panned out yet, but I think they would be good in a rotational role. And Tyquan Lewis, former Ohio State Buckeye, has been with the Colts the last few years, is another rotational guy that I think if they add to the mix with Okoronkwo, Alex Wright, and Isaiah McGuire, and even these guys potentially giving Myles Garrett a breather so he doesn't have to carry the workload that he had to the first few years of his career. I think each one of these guys could bring something to the mix, but I think at the end of the day, I think the first goal is to try to bring back Za'Darius Smith, which they're letting him test the market. We'll see what he can get. And if the Browns feel comfortable with an offer that he brings back to the table, I think the Browns would have no problem bringing him back into the fold.
Would your preference be to bring Za'Darius back? Or my thought was to maybe sign two of these middle tier guys for rotational purposes. And, you know, so that way you would have a rotation of Garrett, Okoronkwo, Wright, McGuire, all those guys you mentioned, and then two of these free agents. So then it would be about the same salary wise.
Yeah, I think so, because like Autry, Campbell, they're projected like 5 to 6 million. So you could, I could see a scenario like that, but I also think at the same time, the Browns might only just sign one because they want to see more of Alex Wright, who had a strong end of the season last year. I think he had like 4 or 5 sacks. I think they're still pretty high on Isaiah McGuire, who was a top 100 pick or pretty close to it last year. He'll be entering his second year. So I could see them signing just one. They might sign two, but I think they want to give these young guys an opportunity. These are guys that they've drafted, developed. I think you want to see the fruits of their hard work and the Browns' development from the coaching staff, just to see what they could bring to the table.
And what's been nice about the guys that they have drafted and are developing, they haven't been forced to play right away. You know, you have Myles Garrett, you had Jadeveon Clowney for last couple years, then you had Za'Darius Smith. So these guys haven't been asked to do everything. And, you know, one of the things, you know, the times we've talked about Pittsburgh is that, you know, these guys are rotational guys for a couple years, and then they eventually become their starters. And that's why they've been so good for so long, because they are able to play in the same system for a few years before they're asked to be a starter. I mean, if they're really good, they become a starter before that. And, you know, they've been able to develop for so many years. Now you're in a spot where you have a cornerstone like Myles Garrett, and you've had a couple veteran guys opposite of him for the last couple years, and guys like Alex Wright, guys like Isaiah McGuire, Isaiah Thomas, they've been able to be behind them and develop. And I think that'll only help them as they continue over these next few years.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is what, you know, Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski had in mind when they took over this organization, that you have your impact guys at the top of the position groups, you draft for depth, and then comes year 2, 3, 4, the rookie deal, then they finally start to make some kind of impact. You know, the old Browns, you know, from 99 to 2019, a lot of our third and fourth round pick guys, and they had to come in and have to fill voids on the roster and have to try to make impact plays. And I think, you know, that's not what good teams do. Now the Browns are in a position where they are a good team. You're able to bring their draft picks along slowly, and you don't have to expect much out of them their rookie year, but then you hope their second, third, fourth years, they can make that impact to prove to the scouting department, the front office, that, you know, we did make the right picks. You know, you just have to give them time to develop.
And that's what we'll talk about in the secondary, but that's what they've been able to do with Greg Newsome and Emerson as well. Yep. And now, you know, the other guy that they drafted, Cam Mitchell, last year. So able to bring these guys up slowly, and eventually, you know, they'll probably take over those starting spots. But let's stick with the defensive line here. We talked about last week how the defensive tackles, they have 3 free agents, Maurice Hurst, Jordan Elliott, Shelby Harris. They do still have Siaki Ika on the roster as well for defensive tackle, along with Dalvin Tomlinson, who they signed in free agency last year. So they are going to have to, you know, between free agency and the draft, fill a couple of those spots on the defensive tackle position. There are some interesting names on top of bringing guys like Maurice Hurst and Shelby Harris back. Christian Wilkins would be a huge get. Javon Kinlaw, Daquan Jones. I know Wilkins is kind of a big name, and the Dolphins did not tag him. What would it mean for this defensive line if Andrew Berry was able to bring in Christian Wilkins to play next to Myles Garrett?
I mean, it'd be pretty huge. Not just because Wilkins is a big dude, but the talent that he has brought since entering the league out of Clemson. It would definitely be pricey, though. You're seeing between $22 and $25 million per year is the projected contract for Wilkins. So, Anthony, this is the scenario where if the Browns are making a big move in free agency, a big swing, you're probably letting Za'Darius Smith walk. And then you're getting really cheap on the rest of that defensive line just because of the number that Wilkins will command on the open market. It's expected to be, but he would be a huge acquisition. It's a guy that's great at stopping the run. He gets after the quarterbacks. Although the numbers, they tended to go up last year in his free agent year, which definitely gives me a little qualms, but Christian Wilkins is a great football player. He will help this defensive line. But then you wonder about the depth. So I personally don't know if the Browns are really going to do this. I know there's a lot of buzz between Wilkins and the Browns, but at the same time, I kind of don't want to put all my eggs in that basket. Like Jack Duffin's talked about, like the Browns' budget for the offseason is around $40 million. Are we really going to spend half the budget on one player when we can spread the pot, bring in a couple guys like Javon Kinlaw, bring back Mo Hurst and Shelby Harris, still have Dalvin Tomlinson and Siaki Ika in the room? Like, if you're giving me the option, I probably might want to spread the pot around, bring guys back, and, you know, keep rolling the way it did last year with the depth and be able to mix guys in and out in a rotation. Christian Wilkins sounds great, but I would rather spread it around and bring multiple guys in that can get after the quarterback and help stop the run.
I remember seeing a stat within the last few days, and I was trying to look for it and I couldn't find it. Him and Dalvin Tomlinson were both two of the highest players that were double teamed on the inside. And if you had both of them next to each other, you know, that would obviously be interesting for opposing offenses. But you're right. If they were to sign Christian Wilkins, it would certainly not be for cheap. The other players to fill out the defensive tackle position would probably have to come into the draft or
vet minimum guys. Yeah, like
vet minimum or UFAs, you know, something. But, you know, it would certainly be an interesting piece. But then, you know, you talked about the defensive end spot there. Za'Darius probably isn't coming back at that point. You would probably have to sign, you know, a vet at that position and then, you know, have a rotation of the guys that we had talked about previously in terms of the edge players. So it's kind of like pick or choose. So if you had to pick or choose between Wilkins or Za'Darius, where would you go?
That's tough because Za'Darius was good. I know there's probably some people out there going, well, he didn't rack up the sacks. He had 60 pressures. He had double digit QB hits. Like, he was an effective pass rusher playing only around 60% of the snaps last year. Like, I like Za'Darius Smith. I have no problems that they bring him back unless it's like a major overpay and he, you know, fleeces the Browns. You know, Christian Wilkins is a good thought, but D tackle's getting really expensive. I know last year we were in on Javon Hargrave and Draymond Jones, and those guys went elsewhere. We got Dalvin Tomlinson at a pretty good deal for the D tackle market. Like, I don't know. But then at the same time, Anthony, like, I want to see Alex Wright get more. I want to see Okoronkwo get more. I want to see Isaiah McGuire get more. So I'm kind of like iffy on this. If you had to pick between the two, but like, if we can get Za'Darius Smith and a wide receiver of, like, say, Curtis Samuel, or get Christian Wilkins, I'd probably go Za'Darius and then using that extra money to go get a wide receiver of some sorts or somebody else at a position. Like, we talked about running back yesterday. If I can get Za'Darius and DeAndre Swift and then a cheap wide receiver over or instead of spending all the money on Christian Wilkins, like, I might want to take the option A.
Yeah, it would certainly be. I'll go ahead.
But I will say, if we get Christian Wilkins, I'll be excited because he's a good football player and he'll help the defensive line. So it's like, they're both good scenarios, but I'd probably take, like, if we can sign three guys for the price of one, I'm probably going to do that.
Yeah, you know, the more you could fill, you know, to use a term, you know, putting the eggs in all in one basket. If you could spread those around a little bit more, you know, that certainly helps out. But you're getting a big playmaker at a position on the other side of it, so it's a tough thing to make a decision on. You know, unfortunately, you know, there is a cap that you have to follow, and you can't just sign a limited amount of guys. You know, if that was the case, there'd be super teams all over the place in the NFL. But because of the cap and how it's structured, teams aren't really able to do that as much. You know, we've seen maybe some glimpses of it with teams like stockpiling talent, but you know, it's very hard to do and sustain in the NFL. I would say that you could put teams together like that, but it's hard to sustain it for years and years. You know, to have like these really stacked teams, because at some point you just get priced out of it and you can't keep everything together. All right, let's move on to the linebacker position, where the Browns have a couple free agents as well. Actually, they have five. Anthony Walker, Taki Taki, Jacob Phillips, Matthew Adams, Jordan Kanasic, all are free agents. So they do still have JOK. They have Tony Fields and a couple other players as well. But this is a position, Jack, where between the draft and free agency, you're going to have to fill some holes here, not only as maybe some every down guys or two out of three downs, but also some special teams players as well. And some of the names you have on here, besides bringing back Taki Taki, Walker, Adams, and Kanasic, Nicholas Merrow, Zach Cunningham, Denzel Perriman.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm going with Jack Duffin's projection of JOK getting a $10 million a year extension, which is probably the most that a Browns, this Browns regime has ever given to a linebacker. So then how do you fill out the rest of the room? I would bring back Taki Taki. I think it's like $2.75 million on a 2-year deal per year, $2.75 million per year. I'd bring him back. I would try to get one of these other guys, Morrow, Cunningham, or Perriman, get one of those guys on like a 1-year deal, and then fill out the room with Adams and Kanasic. And we have Diabate, who was our UDFA last year. So he'll come back in the fold as well. So that's how I'd fill out the linebacker room. I would bring in another solid vet to accompany JOK, and then bring back Taki Taki. And then you have Fields, and then you sign one of these special teamers like Adams or Kanasic. You can go either way because they're both pretty effective in special teams. But that's how I'd fill out the room, because after you sign JOK to a big extension, you kind of have to piece it together with, you know, cheap contracts and draft picks.
Yeah, if anything I care about is getting JOK an extension in terms of the linebacker spot. I would love that. You know, you do have Delpit, who they like to do some things in a box with him as well. But I would prefer to have Taki Taki back. We'll see what they do with some of the other guys. But for me, the priority is getting JOK an extension and then filling in the pieces, whether it's guys on veteran minimum deals or draft picks or UFAs as well. For me, I really don't have a preference with that, but I would prefer to get JOK an extension and then, you know, bring back Taki Taki would be my priority.
Yeah, for sure. Taki Taki's been a good player. Another good draft pick, probably the only one John Dorsey had in his two drafts here. Well, no, out of the 2019 draft class, because I forgot he was the guy in charge for 2018. But Taki's been a good player, has gotten better every year. I definitely think it's a priority to bring him back.
For sure, for sure. All right, let's move on to the secondary now. And I really don't think there's too much to talk with cornerbacks, because you do have, you know, the top three, Denzel Ward, Martin Emerson, and Greg Newsome. There's a lot of talk about whether Newsome will be here, if they may look to trade him and maybe, you know, start Denzel Ward and Martin Emerson. You know, you're starting to get to the point to where within a couple years, all right, is it this season you would decide on Newsom's fifth year, or would that be next year?
Correct. You got to decide by like May after the draft.
After draft. Okay. So you have to figure out if the Browns are going to pick up that option, if they are going to, you know, explore some kind of extension. I don't know that they will. I would rather maybe see that money go for Martin Emerson. but that is just me. They do also have Cam Mitchell, who they drafted last year. So the last 3 years they've drafted corners. I would imagine they'll probably draft another one at some point this year. That's kind of been an Andrew Berry staple so far of players that he's taken in the draft. He's taken a corner every year. Mike Ford is a free agent at the cornerback spot, and you have the Browns potentially bringing him back. You also have a couple other names on here as well, Miles Bryant and Amik Robertson.
Yeah, so, you know, the cornerback room, like you said, it's a tough situation because we have Denzel Ward. He's guaranteed to be here. Martin Emerson's going to be here. He's extension eligible after this coming season in 2024. Newsome obviously is the name to watch because of the fifth year option, because there's been rumors that the Browns will look to trade him just because his fifth year option is like $13 million for next season. And Newsome can probably get you some kind of asset going forward. We know the Browns have been pretty good at drafting corners, like you said. So I look at this room, you need a nickel. That's why I mentioned Miles Bryant and Amik Robertson as two potential options. I'd bring Mike Ford back because he was a great special teamer for us last year as our gunner. And I think, Anthony, we could pencil in a corner at some point in the draft because, like we said, Andrew Berry's been great at finding corners. And, you know, you mentioned like drafting corners. They found a UDFA in 2020 in AJ Green, who they paid like a draft pick. So they have a good eye for finding defensive backs, developing them into NFL level corners. So I expect them to find another one potentially this offseason just because that's been their MO.
Yeah, that's we talked about a little bit last week about the positions that Andrew Berry has drafted consistently. Corner was one. Offensive line has been one. What was the other one? There's a third one that we had talked about that he's drafted like every single draft so far. Wide receiver?
D-tackle.
Oh, D-tackle. Okay. So, you know, you might be able to pencil in those three spots in the draft, but we'll wait and see on that. And yeah, I mean, there's really not a whole lot to add in terms of cornerbacks in free agency, but, you know, special teams could be the focus here. If they decide to sign buddy, maybe they sign somebody who specializes in special teams at the cornerback spot. I did hear that in the draft this year, if you want a nickel guy, this is maybe the draft to do that in. So you know, potentially, you know, that could be a replacement for Newsome down the road. I wonder if that's a trade that gets explored, you know, soon leading up to the draft, but, that's something that we could talk about, on a different day. But I really don't think there's a whole lot to do with this cornerback room.
No, I mean, it's pretty much set. We're just kind of wondering what's going to happen with Greg Newsome. Do they trade him? Do they just decline the fifth-year option? They might pick it up, too. I mean, that might entice a team to trade for him just because then you have him essentially for 2 years, and then you have time to work out an extension if a team is interested in Greg Newsome. But it would seem to me, when it comes to extension priorities in that room, that Martin Emerson is above him. And then the Browns can find a nickel corner unless they're high on Cam Mitchell to fill that void, which would be weird because they're Newsome and Mitchell are best friends. So that could be an awkward situation, but at the end of the day, football is a business and they got to take care of themselves before they could take care of one another.
You also don't have the luxury of having that fifth year with Emerson as well, since he was a third round draft pick. So that's a decision that needs to be made a little bit sooner as well in terms of a potential extension for him. So we'll see how it goes. But I, with the corners, there's really not a whole lot that I think you could plan on in free agency. With the rest of the secondary, safety-wise, the Browns have Grant Delpit, who they signed to an extension this last season. They signed Juan Thornhill in free agency last year. De'Anthony Bell, they brought in 2 years ago, and then Ronnie Hickman they brought in last year, who had to play some down the stretch and didn't do too bad of a job. You do have two guys that are free agents, Daron Harmon, Roddy McLeod, a couple veteran players that were on the team for the season. I want to say they brought in Daron a little bit later into the season. You have here bringing back potentially Roddy McLeod, and then three names. Two are very interesting to me. Those two are Jordan Poyer and Kevin Byard, and then you have a third guy on here, Taylor Rapp.
Yeah, so I mean, we talked about this before we hit the record button, and I was like, are they going to sign a safety? Because they have Thornhill, they have Grant Delpit, they have Hickman, they have, I think those are the three safeties. So they might draft one. I've kind of been drafting one in these mock draft simulators late, but then they might sign a veteran. And you see the veterans that have become available the last couple weeks, you know, as teams start, you know, making cap space. Jordan Poyer gets cut today as the Bills are, you know, cleaning up their salary cap situation. They've cut a lot of veteran players, which is really interesting, but they got to get under the cap. But Poyer's an option, former Brown. I don't know how he feels about the organization after they kind of kicked him to the curb and didn't see much in him, and then he turned into a Pro Bowl level player for Buffalo. He's an interesting option in terms of veteran leadership and a guy that can still give you something if they want to do three safety looks. Kevin Byard's another name. He was one of the best safeties in football. Kind of fell off this past season in Tennessee and Philadelphia. Taylor Rapp was an interesting prospect years ago, played well in LA, went to Buffalo last year and really didn't have a good situation there in that secondary. And then if they bring back Roddy McLeod, I would not have no qualms about that. I thought he brought a lot in terms of production and veteran leadership in that room and in the whole defensive side of the ball. So I feel like they signed some kind of veteran, but they might just go draft somebody late, maybe a UDFA. But the safety room, you know, Juan Thornhill, he's got 1 year left after this year. So if they sign somebody at free safety, Anthony, I think that could be something to keep an eye on if they're not comfortable all the way with Juan Thornhill anymore, because he was hurt a lot of 2023. So that might actually be interesting. Now I might need to look at these free agent safeties a little more, because maybe they surprise people and bring in another guy to accompany the rest of the room.
Yeah, that could be an interesting situation. And I was trying to pull up the Thornhill's contract really quickly.
I think he's got guaranteed money this year, but then after this season, like, he's a guy that they can get off the books.
I'm not exactly great at reading these because he does have two void years after his contract is up after 2025. And it says his cap number for 2026, the first void year, is $9.2 million. So I'm not great at reading this. I'll have to have you decipher this at some point for me. But it doesn't seem like it's something that they would be able to get out of, because if they cut him before June 1st, this year it'd be $11.8 million. Before June 1st next season, $7.9 million. And then there's you know, dead money in the void years as well. So
I'm looking at it right now too. His guaranteed money's up after this year, so they can post June 1st cut him. He has a $2 million option bonus due next year on August 30th. So if they want to get out of it, they can post June 1st, cut him. They'll have to take $2.2 million dead money hits in 25 and 26, but they can save $10.3 million in cap space over that length as well. So I think if he doesn't have a productive year this coming year, I could see the Browns just moving on after the 2024 season with Thornhill.
And we do know Andrew Berry is very good at preparing for the future. So
yes,
at least a year in advance. So there could be something down the road for safety, whether that's a draft pick or a free agency signing as well. When we talk about these free agent guys, I feel like we should just kind of repeat the guys on the defensive side that were tagged, since we talked about a lot of these guys today. about the free agents. So Jaguars edge Josh Allen was tagged, Panthers edge Brian Burns, Patriots safety Kyle Duggar was transition tagged, Bears corner Jalen Johnson, Ravens defensive tackle Justin Madubuike, Chiefs corner Ladarius Sneed, and Buccaneers safety Antoine Winfield Jr. Was also tagged. I just kind of wanted to remind about those guys that were tagged as well. So those guys are not going to be in free agency. I guess Duggar can be signed, but it's probably unlikely that he does since he has the transition tag. But we'll see what the Browns decided to do here in a few days. Is there anything else, Jack, you wanted to talk about free agency wise before we wrap up these couple preview episodes?
Let's touch on Buffalo real quick, just because they're, I mentioned it when we talked about Jordan Poyer, but they have made a lot of roster moves today. They were $40 million over the cap coming into the day, but they went and cut Jordan Poyer, like I mentioned, their starting center, Mitch Morse, cornerback, Saron Neal, wide receiver slash returner, Deontay Hardy, running back, Nyheim Hines, and probably the biggest name on that list, cornerback, Tre'Davious White. They created $26 million in cap space today. So they're still over. Tre'Davious White's going to be a post June 1st cut. So that'll open $10.2 million, but not until June. So they still have more moves to make, but you go look, they have a lot of guys to restructure. Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, if they don't trade him, which has been a rumor for months now. And Von Miller, they're going to open up a lot of cap space, but they cut like several key starters from their team from the past several years. I know Tre'Davious White's been bit with the injury bug, but the Bills are undergoing a lot of changes this offseason from the looks of it. But yeah, they're opening up some cap space. So this is going to be a interesting time because they're obviously one of the big challengers for the Browns in the AFC.
I seen our friend of show, Kevin Massari, posted that he has also been released as well. So we might have to sign him onto the podcast with that tweet that he put out recently. So
yeah, I reached out to him and I was like, do any of these moves surprise you? And he said Mitch Morse was the only one. So that's pretty telling that like the starting center was like the biggest surprise among the roster moves up in Buffalo. But there are some notable names out there that just hit the market. Deontay Hardy, we already talked to offense on Tuesday, but that's an interesting one as a potential back end of the wide receiver room, because he's a return specialist. I think he had that 96 yarder against Miami on Sunday night at the end of the year last year. So if the Browns want to up their return game and get somebody with some serious speed, maybe Deontay Hardy's a depth wide receiver signing that they can make once free agency opens.
Yeah, it'd be certainly interesting to see what they do return game wise. And it'd be curious to see how the return game goes, because apparently there's a new rule proposed for kickoffs as well this year. So we'll see kind of how down the road, how kickoffs are affected by any sort of changes this offseason. We'll have to maybe dive into that rule proposition a little bit more later on as well. But yeah, I mean,
for sure,
Buffalo clearing a lot of room. They could definitely restructure Josh Allen to help. It's crazy. Stephon Diggs has 4 more years on his deal as well. So it'd be curious to see what happens with him, because he turns 31 this year. So, I mean, you know, it's not exactly a young receiver. And we've seen with some of these guys, especially receivers, as they get older, you know, there's could be quite a drop off there. Maybe it's already started for Stephon Diggs, but he's still a pretty good player. So we'll kind of see how that situation handles itself with him in Buffalo.
Yeah. They've been talking about potentially trading him, but it just seems like they're kind of stuck with him, because like you said, he is getting older. He might be starting to, you know, hit the wrong side of 30 where his career started dips. Still a good wide receiver. I don't know if he's among the elite anymore, but yeah, I know there's been trade rumors for a while. Allegedly there's trade rumors connecting the Browns, which I've never seen, but if you listen to other Cleveland sports personalities, they're telling you otherwise. But yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what Buffalo does, how they shake that roster up and still try to compete when you have an elite quarterback like Josh Allen. who isn't going away anytime soon and will keep Buffalo in contention as long as he's around.
You know, it'll be curious to see what all shakes out here. And we'll probably be back on Monday, the first day of tampering, to talk about anything that has happened. We'll talk, even if the Browns don't sign anybody, we'll have a podcast and kind of break down some of the moves that have been made across the NFL. And until then, be sure to give Jack a follow on Twitter at JackMcCurry08. Me a follow at Anthony Jokey, J-O-K-I. The Dogland a follow on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, at The Dogland. Until next time, always remember, go Browns.